Good evening, everyone, and welcome to NAMA's seminar in Ayurveda. My name is Danica Lynch, and I, along with my fellow members, Heather Grish and Katie Castellano, will be moderating tonight's seminar. The Seminars in Ayurveda is a monthly teleconference organized and run by the members of the student workshop of NAMA, chaired by Ellen Leonard. The Seminars in Ayurveda is a free service to the community at large, featuring a special presenter who presents an educational topic that is beneficial to Ayurvedic students and practitioners. At this time, we will mute all listeners so we can hear our presenter clearly. You will have an opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer portion of the seminar toward the end of the presentation. So please make sure to write down all your questions to ask later. And at this time, I will hand it over to Heather, who is going to introduce tonight's presenter.
Thanks, Danica, and welcome everybody tonight. I'm very excited to introduce our presenter this evening, Petra Niger. And Petra will speak tonight about extending your reach with digital and social media, right? Marketing, something every Ayurvedic person hates. Right? Do you hate marketing? Well, maybe Petra can make us love it tonight, right? It's a necessary thing we've got to do when we have our own business, right? So if we're practicing Ayurveda here in the United States, it's a, you know, something we all need to know about. So Petra is going to speak to us tonight. She's a marketing strategy advisor to C-level executives. Prior to starting her own consulting business, she held leadership roles at Cisco, Siemens, Seagate, and Polycom. She's also the founder of an organization called Red Pants, which is a sustainable productivity company. And this brings together her unique background in management and Ayurvedic medicine to help leaders and teams live and work in healthy, mindful ways. She's an Ayurvedic practitioner and a yoga teacher. And so tonight, we're excited to have Petra here. Welcome, Petra.
Thank you so much, Heather. It's great to be here. And for those of you who are sitting in front of a computer, I've actually uploaded some slides because I'm in marketing, so I like slides. So those of you that are interested in following along, you might want to type in the following URL into your browser. It's slideshare.net/Petra, P-E-T-R-A, 1400. So it's slideshare.net/Petra1400. And it's the most recent presentation that you will see up there called Digital and Social Media Introduction, Extend Your Reach with Digital and Social Media for Ayurvedic Professionals. So I'm going to wait a minute or so for everyone who wants to go there to be able to go there. And you can set the slides into full screen mode. And then we can get started. What we'll cover over the next 40 minutes or so is starting with the why. So the first question we're going to look at is, why do we even want to do this? The second one is understanding the online consumer landscape. The way consumers are behaving online is a little bit different than what you might be used to. The third question, and this is going to be the biggest portion of the presentation, is going to talk about how to make digital and social media work for you. And we're going to close with 7 steps to success. So there are 7 things to remember to learn over time. So let's go to the first question. The first question is why. You always have to start there. Why do you want to do this? Why do you want to do digital and social media for your business? There are a couple of reasons why you might want to do that. One is raising awareness. Maybe you're just starting a brand new practice. Maybe nobody knows you and you want to get the word out, not just in the physical world, but also in the online world. Maybe you want to build credibility. Maybe you already have a growing practice and a really good practice, but you want to build loyalty. You want those people who have seen you before to continue to come back to you and build that loyalty. And maybe they can even refer other clients to you because you keep yourself top of mind in those customers' eyes. Maybe you want to get new customers. And maybe you want to drive return visits and purchases. Maybe you have some products that you're selling online and you want to make people aware of those products and you want them to come back and buy products from you. Maybe it's a combination of these things. But the main question you have to ask yourself is, why are you doing what you're doing? Every why will determine what tactics will be best suited for what you're looking to accomplish. And here's the reason why. If you go to the next slide, these are just things for you to be very aware of. This is what we call vata vitiation in Ayurveda. The human attention span is now 8 seconds. It used to be 13 seconds in about 2000, and now it went down to 8 seconds in 2013. And by the way, the attention span of a goldfish is 9 seconds, so now we're officially worse than a goldfish. And people have to see your content 3 to 5 times and interact with it before they believe it. So just because you send something out, don't assume that, oh, I sent this out, people have seen that. They have to see it at least 3 to 5 times for them to actually believe what you're talking about. And they have to see it even more times. They have to see it about 7 times. They have to be exposed to that content 7 times before they take action. So when you send out a newsletter or a tweet or a Facebook post or something where you're trying to get people to take action, just because you post it one time, don't assume that people will have seen it and they will take action. They have to be repeatedly exposed to your message. Now let's look at things from their perspective on how they explore things before they get to you. So if you go to the next slide on SlideShare, I'm on slide 5 now, and this can look really challenging at first, but bear with me, this will make sense. The bottom line is that consumers will explore many sources before they come to you. So their decision is not, I want to come to Heather for an Ayurvedic consultation. Their decision starts with, I have a problem. And they're going to look into online a lot of different things before they even get to Ayurveda. And once they get to Ayurveda, they might come to you. So there's a lot of decisions that are taking place. There's a lot of research that's taking place online that you're not yet part of before people come to you. So awareness is the very first stage when they say, I've heard of you. But by the time they get to awareness, they've already done research maybe on Chinese medicine, maybe on naturopathic medicine, maybe on other kinds of healing modalities. But from your standpoint, the first exposure they get to you is the awareness stage, which is, I've heard of you. Now, at this point, they've only heard of you. They're not necessarily interested in you. So it's your role, and this is how you can use digital and social media to help move these people along these decisions so that they ultimately buy from you and engage with you. So after they become aware of you, they've heard of you, you can deliver different types of experiences and content to them where they go from, I've heard of you, to, I'm interested in you now. So this is what we call in marketing the interest phase. And then from there, they will move on to the next phase, which is called consideration. Before, they were just interested in you, and now all of a sudden, they like you. They're starting to develop some type of a positive relationship with you and positive affinity towards you. And then from this point on, they're going to evaluate you even more. Can I trust you? Can I really relate to you? And based on that decision, once they say, yes, this is a person I can trust, this is a person I can really relate to, this person understands me and speaks my language, now I'm going to buy from you. So this is where the first purchase happens. But when that purchase happens, then they will decide whether or not they love you. The experience that you provide to them will then create an additional relationship, an additional idea in their head about you. So once they love you because you've provided them with a really good positive experience, then over time, they can love you so much that they're going to recommend you to their friends. This is what we call advocacy or advocating. Now, this is not a surprise because even if we put digital and social media aside, this is just how the world works. But what made digital and social more interesting, even from an Ayurvedic practitioner, is that if somebody is happy with that experience of you, because of digital and social media, now they have the resources and the tools to get that message out to a lot more people than before, all at once and a lot faster. So somebody that comes and sees you, they might be in the recommendation and I love you phase. They might meet somebody online who is still in the interested or I've heard of you phase. So it's really important that at that point, the person who really loves you can essentially become an advocate for you and recommend you not just in the offline world, but also in the online world. Because 92% of consumers trust word of mouth and recommendations from people that they're somehow connected to, okay, besides, above all other advertising. So this is where creating communities in social media, your Facebook page, and any other blogging platforms or any other social activities that you do where you can create an online community and nurture an online community becomes so important for your business. So what these findings really mean to you is essentially four things. You have to provide value to your audience. Your audience will start moving from the I'm aware of you to I trust you and I relate to you once you provide value to them. So you have to give to them before you take. The second one is you have to give them a taste of the overall experience. What you really want them to do is to come and spend time with you, get your services, get your products. But if they don't know you, they will want to have some type of an experience with you to judge whether or not they want to buy from you. So during this journey that I was describing earlier, you want to give them a taste of the overall experience. The third one is, here's the thing about social media. There are so many platforms out there, and literally you can get really sucked into it. So you have to be very clear about who you want to go after, who is your audience that you want to target, and what channels you want to focus on. We'll talk about this in a little bit, but it's really important to set very clear priorities. The worst thing you can do is to be everything to everyone. You're going to burn out. You're going to waste a lot of cycles on social media and in digital for not a lot of return. So you have to really define who do you want to go after and what channels you're going to focus on with social. And the fourth thing that this means to you is commit to it long term. There is still that perception by some people who think, oh, I'm just going to create a Facebook page and they're all going to come to me and they're all going to love me. And it takes time. Social takes time. You have to build an audience. Just like how you're building an audience offline, you're building an audience online as well. So you have to be patient as you go through this journey. So let's look at now how to make digital and social work for you. The very first tip is to get to know your audience. Like I said, who is your audience? Who are the people that you're going after? The reason why this becomes important is because with digital media and social media, now you can target people very specifically. So let's say you are going after the yoga community because you have the assumption that the yoga community is already familiar with Ayurveda. Then you have to know who the people are that you're going after, because when you start doing paid advertising, social ads on Facebook or on Twitter or LinkedIn or any other channels, then you have to know who the audience is because you can really laser target those people with your ads and with your messages. But besides that, you also want to know what they read, what they watch, what they listen to, and what they share. Here's the thing. Social, even though you really want there to, you really want to go there to extend your reach, it's not all about you. If somebody is constantly using social media just to sell their services, people will tune you out. That goes back to the comment I made about providing value. So if you know that your audience really cares about, obviously they care about health, but if they also care about keeping their family safe, then as you think about what you want to provide them value, provide them with value for, then you can think about topics that are not necessarily related to your particular products or services, but on more of a holistic level. So for example, instead of telling them, hey, come to my sleep clinic, the message that you might send them is, I'm going to do a webinar and show you 7 ways to better sleep. So it indirectly, it's going to affect your business, but you're not approaching them from a, I want your business and I want you to pay me right now perspective. So changing that conversation and addressing the audience's care abouts from their perspective becomes very important, because that can translate into additional business for you. You also want to learn where they engage and where they go for information. There are a lot of platforms out there right now. CureJoy is an example, MindBodyGreen. There are a lot of platforms that are emerging where people go and get their information from. So if you understand and if you know where these people go, and you can do, and you can find out by doing some research, then you can get some ideas and inspirations from them as to what type of content and what type of activities would resonate with your audience, number one. And number two, you can decide that maybe I want to be a contributor on CureJoy, because then if I write articles for CureJoy, then maybe my audience will see me there as well, so I can increase my exposure. And the last thing about that you want to know about your audience is how they search. The reason why this is important is because I'm going to talk a little bit about your website and your web presence. But the thing is this, I see a lot of websites that have a lot of words on them. But the challenge with that is you're not really writing for humans. You kind of are, but you're also writing for search engines. So you write for search engines differently from how you write for humans. Search engines pick up keywords and context, and that's how they determine when somebody goes on Google and types in, I'm looking for an Ayurvedic practitioner in this and this area, how you tag your website and the words that you include in different parts of your website will determine how high your site is going to rank or how easily people can find your website on Google or Bing or any other search. So you have to kind of get into a mode of not necessarily writing flowery and long words and language on your website, but writing more for a robot, essentially, who will translate and pull the words out of your website to see if it is relevant to what people are searching for. The second point I want to highlight, which is on the next slide, it will be slide number 9 if you're following along online, is to select your online channels very carefully. This is kind of what I said earlier. You have to make the decision, do you want to have your own channels and your own channels only? Or are you saying, I don't necessarily want to have my own channel. I want to have somebody, I want to write for somebody else. Or maybe a hybrid approach, how many? In my experience, what I find is that always start small. Most people have a website, and they already have some type of an email program or email campaign. Maybe you add a Facebook page to that, especially in this space, Ayurvedic practitioner health space, Facebook and Instagram, probably the other one, that tend to be really popular. But again, if you're going after a business audience, then you might want to consider LinkedIn as well as an example. But Facebook typically tends to be one of the most popular channels. And then you need to think about, okay, so am I going to go with website, an email, and maybe a Facebook page, and is that it? I personally, I actually write for Cure Joy, and I write for a couple of other publications. I really enjoy blogging, so I have these sites syndicate my blogs. So I'm already doing the work of blogging for my website, and I'm plugging into these other platforms and taking advantage of their audiences and plugging into their audiences so I can get the word out about my business through those audiences and through those platforms as well. So you might want to do some research and see if this is something that you're interested in doing and if it works for you. And then you have to think about from your own side, unless you use Facebook as an example, is how you should set it up. Should you set it up as a personal page or as a brand page? A personal page essentially is your own personal Facebook page, and you're just going to invite friends to participate with you, and then you're going to share your content as a person. Or you can set it up as a brand page, which is a company page essentially. And once you do that, you will be able to advertise and bring more people into your page and serve content to them. You will also be able to run different ads, etc. So you have to make that decision early on. I'm going to say this. One of the things that I have been seeing now for quite some time, and it's going to continue to increase even more with social channels, is what's called the pay-to-play. So if you decide to do a brand page, Facebook is now really pushing this. Instagram now is part of Facebook, so they're doing it. Twitter is doing this more and more. LinkedIn is obviously starting to do this. What they're doing now is that they want brands to pay. So the way they're doing this is, even if you have followers on your brand page, when you look at the percentage of followers that actually see the content that you put up there, it's going to be really, really small. And the reason for that is because Facebook wants you to pay to put more content or put your content in front of more people. So this is a way they're looking to generate revenue, and this is for you to be aware of. So just be very aware of that. If you decide to set up a Facebook brand page, it's not enough to just get people to come to your page, but if you and like your page, but if you want to stay engaged with them, and if you want to make sure that they see the content that you're putting up there, especially when you're trying to get them to come to a webinar or get them to participate in a certain activity or something major is going on, then chances are you might want to do some boosted posts or some paid advertisement to be able to make sure that more people are seeing your content. So just keep in mind, if you have a Facebook brand page or any other brand page, if you're doing things from a personal perspective, it's a different story. But if you're doing things from a brand perspective, increasingly you will find that you will want to or you will need to pay to get more exposure to people on Facebook, even to your fans. The third point I want to bring up is your online presence, and I'm going to talk about this from a website perspective, and really treat your online presence, your website, as your online office. So what does that mean? First of all, make it easy to find. I talked a little bit about search engines before, so that goes back to the whole idea of not writing in flowery, you know, in a flowery language, but really being straight to the point, very simple, and looking at how people search for that content and purposefully include those words early on in your site, in your content. Make your site easy to navigate, easy to share, and make it easy for people to connect with you. So those three things, the navigation, people's ability to share, and people's ability to connect with you, need to be front and center on your website. The third thing about websites, which I've seen a lot of sites that are still not mobile friendly, most people now are looking at their content on their mobile phones. So it's very important that the website that you build and any content that you build looks good and is very functional on mobile. So if you're working with a web designer or if you're doing your own website, after this session, I encourage you to go back and look at your site to make sure that it works well and looks good on mobile. The fourth thing about your online presence is to keep your website fresh. There's a lot of things that go into a Google algorithm or a Bing algorithm that decides what content gets served when your people, when somebody is looking for something, searching for something on the web. And one of the contributors to the algorithm is the freshness of a website. So by having content and updating your site with content, you're helping the search engine recognize that there's activity, there's stuff going on that website, so it can rank higher. The next point, which is very important, is offering hooks on your website for list building. What I'm showing here on the right-hand side is CureJoy's mobile version. So they have a very mobile-optimized website. And at the bottom, you see Join the Global Revolution. So that's one call to action. And they also have a Like Us on Facebook pop-up where you can go and join their community. There are a lot of different ways that you can encourage people to sign up for your list. One thing, obviously, what I see on a lot of sites is sign up for a newsletter. But besides that, you can offer content. You can offer a free ebook, exclusive content. You can offer, hey, I'm going to host a webinar, sign up for the webinar. So be creative with what type of content you put on your website, which in turn can create email addresses and bring email addresses to you. Another good content that people like is infographics. So these are these, you know, images and some, or maybe some statistics. I'll show you an example later. But infographics are something that people really like. So maybe you create a quick infographic about a topic that your audience cares about, and you tell them, hey, download my infographic. So that's another way where you can get more names and build your mailing list. And then the last idea is, a lot of times people, and this is something I'm also doing on my website, and I'm actually seeing the difference. So on my website, which is redpants.com, redpants with a Z, at the top I have the typical sign up for my newsletter. And then when you go on other pages of the website, I actually have a polite pop-up that shows up. And when that shows up, it goes away after a while. But that's another way for people who normally wouldn't sign up for my newsletter. They would only sign up for something once they have read a little bit of my content. So by having a pop-up email alert or sign up for my newsletter or sign up for my blog, then that tends to work better than just placing a sign up for my newsletter call to action at the top. And the last thing is measuring results. Obviously, you know, you want to see the activities that you're doing, what's really working for you, because you want to spend more time and energy there. And the things that are not really working, you don't want to spend energy and time there. So the next slide, if you're with me, is just showing the CureJoy website on a desktop, and you see that they also have the subscribe to our newsletter at the top of the page, and they also have the Like Us on Facebook call to action. So again, offering people different ways to stay engaged with you and to get to know you beyond just the basics. The fourth idea that works well in social and digital is following the three C's of content. Content needs to be concise, clear, and it has to have a call to action. So I talked a little bit earlier about how you have to write for search engines and not necessarily humans. So you have to balance that. But if you want Google and Bing and the search engines to find you, then you want to consider how people are searching for you. Writing in a concise way means less is more. Say what you have to say in as few words as you possibly can. Clear. You have to use the language that the people that you're going after, your target audience, understands. You have to know what topics resonate with them, and you have to include those words into your copy on your website. So I work with people in business. I work with people that are stressed out, that are burnt out, etc. So and I work with businesses who care about productivity, who care about work-life satisfaction of their employees, for employee retention, and those kinds of things. So when I write something, I include those words in my copy so that when people come to my site, they immediately know what I'm talking about and how what I do can help them. And the third one is call to action. And this is about helping people move along the funnel. Remember at the very beginning when I was talking about I've heard of you, which is awareness, and then they go to I'm interested in you, which is interest, and then consideration, etc. So every opportunity you have, every time you create a piece of content, should have some type of a call to action. The call to action may not necessarily be buy X. The call to action might be share this. The call to action might be if you like this, read this. But you want to help people continue that journey with you, to stay engaged with the content and with the activity that you're creating for them. So one example that I'm showing here on this slide is I wrote a free ebook. So it's on stress. You know, I'm very much focusing on stress and the benefits of managing that. So my call to action on one of the call to actions on my website is for people to download that book. And downloading that ebook requires that they give me their email addresses. So it's also a list building activity on my site. The next point is number five, which is engaging through content, activities, and conversations. And I've kind of been talking about this all along, but I want you to remember something called the 1, 9, and 90 rule. And this is because I don't want anyone to get discouraged. When you're doing something in digital and social media, you know, we tend to get super excited, and then when we look at the numbers, we see we had a ton of people viewing our content, but I asked a question, and not a lot of people responded. Typically, about 1% of the people that view the content will create content and will really engage with you. And about 9% of them maybe edit or modify or share, do something, but not fully engage with you. And about 90% of them will be what we call lurkers. These are people that are watching you, that are consuming your content, but you don't necessarily know who they are or what they're looking at because they're not responding to that. So I want you to be aware of this because it's, you know, obviously, once you start doing social, you will see that maybe you have 500 people who are looking at your content, but there's only 10 or 15 of them or 20 of them who are very actively engaging. But what that's also going to tell you is that you have about 10 or 20 or 25 people who are super interested in what you have to say. So this is a really good opportunity to nurture the relationship with them in a little bit of a different way. So those people can become the people who will say, I recommend you, who become your advocates, and then they can help spread the word on your behalf. And that goes to the activating your network. Right? So these are the people that you can go back to and say, hey, I've seen that, you know, you really like this content or share this content. Thank you so much. Would you mind sharing this content with your network as well? So this is how they can start engaging with you and they can start spreading the word of mouth for you and on your behalf as well. And offer multiple ways to engage. Obviously, sometimes it's about just asking a question. You can also run very simple polls online. They're very easy to build. And sometimes it's just posting things. I do want to say two things in terms of what type of content to use. Stories, tend to do really well. When you're sharing somebody's stories, inspirational stories, they tend to do really well. And then the second piece is visuals. Every time you create a photo or a meme, which is, you know, there's a lot of like inspirational quotes or sound bite size, short perspectives and images, they tend to do really well. Videos tend to do extremely, extremely well. YouTube is actually the number two search engine, believe it or not. So videos tend to do really well. Now, I'm also going to say this. This is in general. If you talk about Facebook as an example, what you will see is that videos tend to do really well on Facebook. Photos also tend to do really well on Facebook, but you have to upload the videos and photos into your Facebook channel. So if you are using a YouTube link and you put it on your Facebook, it's not going to do as well as if you take the video and upload it directly to Facebook. Facebook constantly changes their algorithm. And the way they change their algorithm is that they're pushing content that's native. It's called native when you upload it directly into the site, native to their platform. So what that means is if you create a video, you might put it up on YouTube, but make sure that you also load it, upload it into Facebook. And remember what I said earlier about how if you have a brand page, Facebook will want you to pay and more people can see your content. There's kind of a way around it. If you do a lot of videos and even with photos to some extent, but videos do better, every time you do that, Facebook prefers videos, so they will rank your content higher. So you can get more organic, meaning not paid exposure if you're uploading native videos to Facebook. All right? And what I also wanted to offer for those of you who are running a Facebook page, a Twitter page, LinkedIn page, multiple pages, there are actually some social media management tools that are free and you can use, and you can schedule your tweets and your posts days, weeks, months in advance. So these are listed in the PowerPoint deck, and they're Hootsuite, Buffer, TweetDeck. There's a couple of other ones, but these are free tools that you can use to manage your social media accounts, and you can see right away how your posts are performing. Or you can also see who are the people that are engaging with your content, so then you can see results of your content in that tool in one place from the different channels. The sixth point I want to highlight is integration. Now, we're talking about social and digital here, but the truth is it's not social and digital and the offline world. It's actually everything. So social digital will always work best when they're fully integrated with every activity that you're doing. So online and offline efforts complement each other. So imagine that you're using social media. As an example, you're going to host an event. So you set up an event on Facebook. You send it out to your friends and family and your fans. Maybe you even run a paid ad to get people to come to your event, which is an offline event, right? And then you go to your offline event. You're taking some pictures. And then you're posting those pictures real time on your accounts, and you tag people, you hashtag people, and you're connecting that offline experience with an online expansion. And this way you're able to reach even those people who may not be attending your event. But you can start seeing and uncovering people that are interested in the topic that you're talking about but may not be at your event, and you can follow up with them later. If you have social profiles, add it to your offline materials. If you have a notepad, add your Facebook page, add your LinkedIn profile, whatever channels, or Instagram, whatever channels you're using. If you have a business card, make sure that your social handles, at least the one or two critical handles that you're using, are also on there. If somebody comes into your office and has a meeting with you and scheduled an appointment with you, you usually probably ask them if they want to sign up for your newsletter. You can also ask them to like your Facebook page, as an example. And the last point, which is the seventh point, is promote, promote, promote. It's one thing to get people to your channel. Obviously, if you're just starting out, you have to do a lot more promotion than somebody who has had a practice for quite some time now. So whenever you're doing something or whenever you have content, whether that content is from you, so you created that content, or maybe that's third-party content, maybe somebody else created that content, but it's relevant to your target audience and what you're looking to do, post it on your channels. If you're using hashtags, hashtags are something, it's like a number sign and there's a word after that. Very popular on Twitter, but Instagram and Facebook and now all the other channels have started using those hashtags as well. A hashtag is something that people search for to see what conversations are taking place around the topics that they're interested in. So whenever you're posting stuff, use hashtags so that your content can be exposed to people that are not aware of you, not familiar with you, but they're interested in the topic that you also care about. If you're posting things, tag people. From personal channels, it's very easy to tag people on your Facebook posts and on Instagram. If you have a branded page, you won't be able to tag people necessarily, but you'll be able to tag other brands and other organizations. So by tagging and using hashtags, you're expanding your reach because other people are going to see what you're saying. And like I said, ask people to share your content. Ask your friends. Ask your family. If you see that 1%, you find that 1% of the people who are always or often engaging with your content and promoting your content, ask them if they could also share some very specific content that you want them to share with their network. So ask people to share your content. And cross-promote your content. It's not just put it on one thing. Put it on all of your stuff, your personal channels, your company channels, your brand channels, and make your content very easy to share. It's really important. There should be a direct link to the thing that you want people to share. You should never send them to a main page, and from there, they're going to have to figure out where to go and what the webinar is or where that information is. You want them to be able to share things directly. Remember, people's attention span is 8 seconds. If you don't give it to them right away in a digestible and shareable way, they will go away. And the last thing is consider paid promotions and retargeting. So paid promotions, you can do a Facebook ad that you would have to pay for, and I'll show you some tricks about that. And you can do what's called a retargeting. So if you have a web developer, it's very easy to do to get what's called a Facebook pixel. If you go into Facebook and want to create an ad, it will tell you, do you want to create a pixel? You take this pixel, it's essentially a piece of code, and then you ask your web developer to put that piece of code into your website. What that's going to help you do is when you are running a Facebook ad, and let's say you drive people to your website, they go to your website, but they don't take an action. So maybe you take out a Facebook ad to drive people to a webinar, and your webinar registration is going to be on your website. So they come to your website, they see the webinar registration, but for some reason they leave. In the old days, once those people left, you would never find them. You would never be able to find them because you don't know who they are. But by having that little piece of code, that pixel on the site, now what you're doing is you know that this person came to your site and now they left without taking any action. But because of that little code, now you can retarget them again on Facebook. So they see your ad again. So you've probably seen something similar on Google where you clicked on a pair of boots and then for the next week, all you see every time you go on Google, regardless of what page you go on, is that pair of boots. That's the idea. That's kind of how it works. So I want to show very quickly because I know we're getting short on time and we're almost there. If you plan to run ads on Facebook, I want to highlight two things that will be very important to you. When you go into, I'm on slide 16, when you go into the ad manager in Facebook, the way it's automatically set up is it's automatically set to run your ad on an ongoing basis. So you don't want that because that means that your ad will never expire. You don't want that. So you want to set a start date and an end date. So just be very aware of that because that's the default setting. So you have to say, no, I want my ad to start on a certain date and end on a certain date. The second thing that you want to be very aware of is when you get charged. The default setting is what's called a CPM, which is impressions. You want to change that if, let's say, you're running an ad to increase page likes. You want to change that to page like. You don't want to pay when somebody just comes to your site or sees the site. You want to pay when somebody actually likes your page. So it makes Facebook work harder for you. So just be very, very aware of those two things because they can cost you a lot of money if you're not paying attention. So let's put this all together. I'm on slide 17, and we're wrapping up. So let's say in the awareness phase, I've heard you do an infographic that is a visual illustration of a problem or of some key findings that you found or you researched. And then from there, your call to action will be people go to your website. So once they go to your website, people are already interested. So they tell you, I'm interested. And from your website, now they're going to start reading your blogs. For example, you have a blog integrated into your website. So they're going to start reading your blogs. And as they keep getting your blog and reading your blog, then they're going to decide, you know, I really like this person. So, but I'm not ready to go steady yet, right? We're still just dating in the early stages. And then they say, all right, now I'm ready to give you my email address because I like the content that you have, and now I want to get more regular content from you. And then once that happens, they're not ready to pay for stuff yet, so you might be giving away a free ebook or a free webinar. But then from there, they have a good experience with you, and then they decide, okay, now I'm ready to buy from you, so now I make the purchase. And then once that experience is really good with you as well, then now they love you, so you continue to provide them with value, and eventually they're also going to spread the word for you and on your behalf if they're really happy for you. So putting it all together, always start with the why. Why are you doing what you're doing? What do you want to accomplish? That should be the very first question. And then the second one is lead with listening, which is essentially understand your audience, get to know your audience, get to know who the people are that are really engaging with your content in the digital world, and get them involved. The third one is respecting the platform. Like I said, Facebook, use native videos, use native photos. That works really well. On Twitter, you know, we didn't talk about it too much, but they have character limitations. It's going to change very soon, actually, but it's more about quick news bites. You know, it's more about driving to another page. It's a very quick news source. Become a storyteller. Stories, visuals always sell better than buy my Shirodara kit or whatever that might be. So think about what problem you're solving and articulate and create a story around the problem that you're solving. Integrate your social into everything you're doing. Don't think about social or digital separately. Think about it as part of how you do marketing and how you do business. The next one is be flexible and adjust as you go. You're going to learn things that are working. You're going to learn things that are not working. You have to prioritize, focus on the things that are working and abandon the things that are not working. Experiment, but be careful about not wasting your time and your energy on things that are not really bringing you any results. And then the last thing is be patient. In this world, you have to give before you take. And it's not going to be an immediate return on your investment, but long-term, it will pay off. And that's it. So Heather, I will turn it over to you for questions. So if anyone has a question, thank you so much, first of all, Petra, that was awesome. If anyone has a question, if you'll just hit star 6, that will put you in the question queue. So once again, you just have to hit star 6 on your phone, and then that will prompt us that that you have a question. So don't be shy. If there's anything you'd like to ask Petra, we have just about 5 minutes. To answer a few questions.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Great. Okay. I wanted to, wow, Petra, that was awesome. And just really great real life examples of what, you know, is happening today on social media and really practical for things to be able to learn from. Super empowering. I just wanted to say that before we get into the questions. I guess one question that comes up is when you think about how much time we have when we're running our own business, right, which those of us who are doing this work in Ayurveda, most of us are running our own business. So what do you think the time commitment is for managing, and like even just if you have, like starting very simple, like you have an online community already, like what would you say the time commitment would be just for that?
Yeah, so I think that's what I was saying, like you really have to prioritize. So I can tell you that I have my website and I love to blog. So, you know, I put most of my community development, quote unquote, in blogging. And then I take that blog and I start dissecting it in different ways and presenting the information in different ways. And for me, it's like taking that one piece of content and literally just chopping it up into different kinds of deliverables. So for me, that doesn't take a lot of time. And for me, I think it's every week I sit down and I say, okay, so for the next week, what am I going to put on Facebook? And throughout the week, every time I'm reading something, I'm already saving those things and I'm like, oh, this could be good for Facebook. Oh, this could be good for Facebook. So I, while I'm reading stuff, I'm actually saving things at the same time with the mindset of this could go on Facebook. Oh, this would be really cool, you know, for Facebook. I decided that I will focus most of my efforts on Facebook. So that's why I'm, you know, bringing up Facebook. And at that point, it just becomes a matter of literally putting it into the schedule and scheduling it for a day and a time. I look at, in Facebook Insights, you can see when your audience is online. So I look for times when I know that they're going to be online based on the data that's presented in Facebook. And it you know, I do it once a week, and then I just push it out. And then I look at what people are reacting to or not reacting to. So I probably spend maybe about like 20 minutes every week on just figuring out, you know, what content I should put up there. Writing my blogs, I probably spend about 2 hours on writing, but I'm very anal about that. but then I chop it up into different pieces, and I syndicate it in other channels that doesn't cost me any time, really.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful with that. But if you set aside every day, maybe you set aside, you know, 15 minutes, you start with 15 minutes and see how far you get with that. And the other thing too is the longer you do, the more second nature it becomes. So initially you will probably spend more time, but over time, once you kind of figure out, okay, people are reacting, like when I post something about emotional intelligence, I know now people are really reacting to it. So now when I see something around that, I'm like, all right, so this is going on Facebook. So that's how you're learning about the audience. And
awesome.
Then it becomes easier for you too.
Yeah, and I know that there are companies out there who you can actually pay to manage some of this stuff and to facilitate it. So, like, because you have a background in marketing, it's, you know, you're probably more inclined to do it, but maybe some of the people that are on this call might not. But those options are out there, too. I just wanted to mention that for people. One thing that you said, Petra, and I know we have some other people with questions, so I'll be very brief, is you mentioned that it's really important that people be clear. I think it was like the four C's.
Yeah.
And clear is one of them. And I just wanted to share an example of, you know, when we learn Ayurveda, like we're learning all these Sanskrit terms, we're learning all this stuff that in our culture where we live in the United States is, for the most part, very foreign and very strange and difficult for people to understand. So I think that's part of that clear is like really saying things in a language that people can relate to. If you start talking about Samprapti and Satsmiya and all these things, like people don't get it. And maybe sometimes it's kind of cute because people feel like it's maybe a little bit exotic, but we really do need to do a very good job if we really want to grow this field of Ayurveda to say it in a way that makes sense to the average person who doesn't understand Sanskrit. So I'm really happy that you brought that clear part up.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that, Heather.
Yeah. So I know we have another question waiting in the queue.
Hi, Petra. Great job. One question.
Hello.
Hi. You said, in the beginning, you said learn where your audience engages, where they go for information.
Mm-hmm.
You said there were some resources for that. How do you figure that out?
Oh, very good question. All right. So a couple of ways. You can do listening. So remember, so I talked about hashtags as an example, right? So when you go on Twitter as an example and you enter a hashtag like Ayurveda, you will see the conversations around Ayurveda and where people are pulling that information from. You also know who are, if you have a Facebook, so that's one example, then maybe you have a Facebook page. So you know who the fans are that are on your Facebook page because you can see their names, or some of them are even your friends. So you can literally see, you know, you can click on their pages and see what these people are sharing. So that's another way. The third way is because of the Facebook algorithm, now that you're interested in Ayurveda, it will serve up content to you that are related to Ayurveda. It will also serve up content that your friends like, if you have, you know, if you're on your personal Facebook page. So based on that, you can see what people, your friends and your community likes. So then you know that that is something that they will be interested in. So that's the third way. And then the fourth way that you can look at it is looking at from a problem standpoint. So let's say, you know, I'm, like I said, you know, I work with business people. So I know that my audience also goes to places like Forbes, Inc., Wall Street Journal, HBR, CEO.com. And I've now honed in, because I've been kind of looking at this and following this, I've honed in on some of the specific types of, because, you know, Forbes is really big. So, you know, is it leadership? Is it mind, body, health? You know, so I've kind of honed in on some of these things now where I see where most of that content is being shared by the people that I want to reach and what kind of content. So it's listening, it's learning.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great. Thank you for all the wonderful questions. It's now time to draw tonight's seminar to a close. Thank you, Petra, you know, for the presence today. We really appreciate your time, energy, and the contribution. And thank you to the listeners. We hope you enjoyed tonight's seminar. The seminar has been recorded, and the recordings will be available to the public for the next 60 days or until the next seminar is published. And then the recording will be archived for NAMA members only and may be accessed only through your login. So thank you again, and have a wonderful night.